Oxford Bookworms, Stage 3. Published by FLTRP, copyright Oxford University Press, 2009.
书虫, 牛津英汉双语读物, 第三集. 伊桑弗罗姆.
Ethan Frome by Edith Wharton. Read by Rick Adamson. Chapter 1. Beginnings. If you know Starkfield, Massachusetts, you know the post office there. If you know the post office, you have probably seen Ethan Frome driving up to it in his buggy. And you have probably wondered who he was. It was there that, several years ago, I saw him for the first time. He was a noticeable figure. His tall, strong body was badly twisted, and much shorter on the right side than on the left. He moved slowly and painfully, pulling himself along. Just the few steps from his buggy to the post office were clearly difficult for him. His face had a sad, grim look. It was the face and body of an old man, and I was surprised to hear that he was only 52. I learned this from Harmon Gow, a man who knew all the families around Starkfield. "He's been like that since his bad accident, nearly 24 years ago," said Harmon. "But Fromes don't die young. Ethan'll live to 100, probably."
"He looks like a dead man already," I said.
"I guess he's been in Starkfield too many winters," said Harmon. "Most smart people get out of here."
"Why didn't he get out?" I asked.
"He had to stay and take care of his family. First his father got hurt, then his mother fell sick, then his wife."
"And then the accident?"
Harmon gave a little smile. "That's right. He had to stay then." Ethan Frome used to drive in from his farm every day at about midday. And because I picked up my mail at about the same time, I often saw him. He came to the post office only for a newspaper, and sometimes for a packet from a medicine company for Mrs. Zena Frome. Starkfield people understood that he did not want to stop and talk, and on most days, Frome climbed slowly back into his buggy and drove away without a word to anyone. At that time, my company had sent me on an engineering job near Starkfield, and I was staying at the home of a lady called Mrs. Ruth Hale. Before she was married, her name had been Ruth Varnum, but her husband, Ned Hale, was now dead, and she had returned to live with her mother in the Varnum home. It was a grand house, large and white, with tall, dark trees outside. Although it was clear that the Varnums no longer had much money, theirs was still the finest house in the village. Ruth Hale enjoyed talking about her neighbors,
and I hoped that she could tell me more about Ethan Frome. But when I asked her, she just looked unhappy and said in a low voice, "Yes, I knew them both. It was awful." I asked other people, and everybody in Starkfield agreed that Ethan Frome had had more troubles in his life than most people. But nobody explained why he had that sad, grim look on his face. In the end, I learnt the story, piece by piece, from several people. As often happens, the story was different each time, but I slowly began to put it together, and my interest in Ethan Frome grew stronger when, a little later, I met the man himself. It happened like this. Every day, I had to travel about 3 miles to the station, where I got my train to work. I usually hired a horse from Dennis Eady, the rich village shopkeeper. But in the middle of winter, his and most of the other Starkfield horses caught an illness. For a day or two, I could not find a horse to hire anywhere, until Harmon Gow had an idea. "Why don't you ask Ethan Frome to drive you?" he said. "His horse ain't sick, and he needs a dollar or two. That Frome farm and sawmill don't make enough money to keep a cat alive." So Ethan Frome agreed to drive me, and every day for a week I sat beside him in his sleigh as his thin horse pulled us over the hard snow to the station. Then, in the icy evenings, he brought me back to Starkfield. He was not unfriendly, but during the hour's drive, he never turned to look at me and spoke very little. Once I said something about Florida, and he told me that he had been there. Another time, he showed interest in a science book of mine, which I had left in his sleigh by mistake in the morning. But most of the time, Frome drove without a word, and I began to feel that he was like the land around him. This sad, silent man and the snow-covered fields had the same kind of cold loneliness. Anything warm and alive inside him was locked away under the deep, icy cold of too many Starkfield winters. After about a week, we were driving back one night in terrible weather. Heavy snow was falling, hiding everything in a soft white cloud, and the air had an icy coldness. The old horse was getting tired, and I got out to walk beside him, but I found it hard to keep moving. After a time, Frome looked into the darkness and said, "That's my place down there. We've had enough of this." I understood that he was offering me a bed for the night, and we turned down towards the poor, lonely-looking farmhouse. After I had helped him put away the sleigh and take care of the horse, we fought our way through the snow to the front of the house. I followed him inside, and from behind a door on our right, I heard a woman's voice, a thin, high, whining voice. Frome opened the door of the room. "Come in," he said to me, and as he spoke, the whining voice fell silent. That was the night when I began to understand Ethan Frome and to put together his story.